Oh, it's great to catch up with Stephen Trigg, Carlton's CEO. G'day, Steve.
Well, great for you. What about great for me in the studio with one of the great men?
Steve, it has been a very interesting year for the Carlton Football Club. But before we get to that, we just got the news through that North Melbourne have been in contact with the AFL, considering resting somewhere between 8 and 10 players for that Friday night game against Richmond. Now, I don't think Adelaide would be too happy about that because obviously Adelaide's hoping to beat Geelong and maybe North beating Richmond, and therefore they could actually get a home final. Now, Carl Delina, the CEO of North Melbourne, says that he's been in contact with the AFL, and the AFL has given North Melbourne a green light to go ahead if they wish to, you know, rest maybe up to 8 to 10 players. What's your thoughts on that?
It's interesting.
In terms of the integrity of the game, we know Fremantle at the start of the week is talking about maybe up to 11 players. I think they've already named about six players that may not be named tonight. And most people thought, well, it can't change the position inside the top eight. But obviously there are some ramifications with North Melbourne's decision.
Interesting. Personally, when I first saw the Fremantle decision in terms of what they were going to do, my instinct, KB, was... You know, it's fair. They've earned the right. It doesn't change any ladder position. It seemed appropriate. But now it starts to become looking like a trend. And if, in fact, it can affect other outcomes, other positions, other permutations in the final series, then it does require a bit more thought. I mean, my overriding view is that it's an interesting ploy because resting a player or two, the sorest ones, to prepare for the finals... is an entirely appropriate everyday thing to do. But when you rest 8, 10, 11 players, I mean, my view is that you're flirting with your form. And I know that Fremantle got away with that before, or it worked for them last time they used that ploy. I genuinely think you flirt with your form, you're running a great risk as well. So you need to be very careful about that in terms of momentum and the way you're playing and all of that. And it's very interesting, of course. We play Hawthorn this week, and I might make a call to Stuart Fox and see if he'd like to change his mind, because it looks at the moment as though Hawthorn are going to go full, you know, both barrels on Saturday afternoon against Carlton at the MCG. So their attitude, and I wouldn't know, and I haven't spoken to Brendan about this, but I imagine that their attitude to it is, well, we're not flirting with our form, we're going flat out.
Well, for those who haven't caught up with the news, North Melbourne have said that they've been in contact with the AFL regarding this process, and they've been given approval to go down this path should they need to, and this is they're considering resting between 8 and 10 players. Now, the AFL rules say, this is in terms of what you can actually do in terms of resting players, for the avoidance of doubt, legitimate competitive objective includes the development of the team or players or management of players fatigued or injured, but does not include improving a club's draft position, improving a club's position with respect to a potential player exchange, or manipulating a club's position on the ladder for the purpose of improving its draw within the final series. Now, obviously North Melbourne can't improve its draw in the final series because win, lose or draw, it's going to finish in eighth spot. But so under the rules of the AFL, that's a little loophole there, because North Melbourne can't improve its finals position, but it can certainly have a big effect on where others play in the top eight and finish. So there's a little loophole there.
Well, it's an interesting hypothetical, isn't it? I think Carlton's position can change, but if it were not able to be changed from 17th position, if we were to adopt a position that we'd like to rest some players and start... you know, start pre-season early in terms of the player welfare and so forth, I think I know what the answer would be, and appropriately so. So, look, it's a really difficult area. I imagine that I can understand what the AFL are trying to do in terms of the approval, but it does create an interesting scenario, particularly for the North Melbourne one, not so much the Frio. Mm.
But again, Stephen, I think that it's very difficult for the AFL. If North Melbourne... even if the AFL said, oh, we don't like the idea of this taking place, or even with Frio, if North Melbourne comes out and says, look, we've got 9 changes this week, you know, poor old God, Todd Goldstein, he's exhausted and he's got a sore leg, and Harvey's 37 and he's buggered, Petrie's got a sore shoulder, Zeeble's got a sore knee, the AFL can't make you pick your best side. All they can ask you is to pick a side to go out on the field and for that side to do its best.
Absolutely.
And for you to coach in the coaching box to do your best to try and win the game. So they may have... I think they can rip up these rules. I don't think these rules are applicable because the AFL is not in a position to tell a club how to pick its side. All it can ask is the side that you pick does its best.
Well, equally, you cannot... I mean, if that's North Melbourne's... view about the best way to prepare for the finals and Fremantle's view about their best way to prepare for the finals, despite my personal view about flirting with form. I mean, if they genuinely believe that that's their best means of getting a result through the finals and it's approved by the AFL, you cannot blame them.
No.
At all. And it'll be very... I think it's fascinating. It'll be really interesting to see how both those teams front in the first week of the finals.
Just on... let's get to Carlton. Ben Bolton has been appointed as the new Carlton coach. Most people were surprised when you made the comment during the press conference. Now, you're probably all wondering, you know, what the deal is here and how many years we've signed him up. He's on staff. Can you just explain to our listeners what it means for a coach to be on staff and not be signed, say, to a 3 or 4 or 5 year deal?
So maybe the simplest way to explain it is this, is that almost all, I suspect, the executives and people at AFL and in club land would be on letters of appointment with conditions, terms, and some sort of termination clause in there. And this is no different to that. And I think it's the modern, contemporary best way to do it. It's on staff. It is a letter of appointment. There is some protection in there for both parties in terms of termination and what that looks like. But what it does is it, in part, KB, and I have to say, I've come to really dislike what we do in the industry in terms of the last year and maybe the last 14, 15 months of a coach's contract. The
speculation?
The speculation, the... all of that, it becomes quite distracting and inappropriate. And so if this goes some way to avoiding that, all the better. But really it's based on a good, sound relationship and a good, sound letter of appointment or agreement with some termination clauses in there. And Brendan and his management were right for it. And I'm really pleased with the way that it's turned out for Carlton.
But does it give... I mean, most people will say, well, he's a coach for 3 years and it does give him, you know, a bit of peace of mind that if something goes wrong or someone changes their mind at the club and they decide to get rid of a coach, that he's still got a year to go on his contract. So, you know, he's not left short. So in the case of someone being on staff, I mean... Is there any guarantee that you're on staff for a certain period of time before what can kick in, which is that after that you're on staff? And
That can certainly happen.
If we decide after, you know, 3 months in the fourth year or the fifth year, it's all over, well then we just terminate and away we go. I mean, is there's got to be some protection there for the incoming coach, surely.
As I said, there's some protection there. Well, first thing is this, is that we would hope that we've got it right. We've been as thorough as we possibly can, and we believe we've landed ourselves an outstanding young coach, and we're going to put the very best people we can around him to make sure that we're successful. And we would hope, KB, and expect that it can be a very long-term partnership with Brendan. Speak hypothetically, there are some ways of setting up these letters of appointment that give guaranteed tenure. There are then ranges of termination clauses from 1 month to 3 months to 6 months, depending often on seniority, and that's the sort of thing that we've developed with Brendan. And and as I said on the day, it breaks the mould a little bit, but it's entirely appropriate for where Carlton's at the moment, because I feel like we're breaking the mould in a number of areas.
Devin Trigger's been good enough to join us, the CEO of the Carlton Football Club. Lots happening. Of course, Brendan Bolton was up there watching the game on the weekend. I was broadcasting that game. Carlton were fairly competitive in the first half, about 5 points down at half-time, completely non-competitive after half-time. Have you had a chat to Brendan Bolton after the game? He was on the plane coming home with us, and he was sitting there, and he was having a bit of a snooze and probably thinking what he had seen on that particular day. So what stage is Brendan at with Stephen Silvani and the club in this planning of what's going to happen at Carlton?
Well, we believe it's very much the right call to have allowed John Barker, who's done you know, a tremendous job under difficult circumstances in the last half of the season, to continue through to Saturday. Brendan started this week just quietly in the background, planning, meeting, greeting, just letting John get on with what he's doing. in completing our duties through to round 23. And then next week, Brendan will step up. So at the moment, it's getting familiar with Carlton, what we do, people starting to have some interviews with players. Mm. But by and large, he's very much in the background at the moment, and he'll step up to the plate next Monday. But yes, I spoke to him after the game, and I think it just reinforces the amount of work that we've got to do. Notwithstanding, we had 19 or 20 that we couldn't choose from on last Saturday. So it makes it a little difficult to assess. It's a typical profile.
Well, Murphy for starters.
You hang on and hang on, and then you can't hang on any longer. But just underline the amount of work that we've got to do. We all know that. He knew it before he took the job. But having said that, he's pretty bubbly and optimistic about what we can do with him.
What about Johnny Barker? Will he stay on at Carlton?
Well, it remains to be seen, because it's interesting, KB. Someone who's had an interim role for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, it comes and goes really quickly. But when you've had it for 13 or 14 weeks, there's a certain emotional investment and sense of, not ownership, but, attachment to it that comes with it. He and Brendan and I agree that the best thing is to get this weekend done, and then to have a week or two to just quietly get away from it and see what the true emotions feel like. I mean, he's really got to get out from behind the steering wheel and jump into the back seat. And he's full of character, JB, and I'd back him to do it if he said he wanted to. But our shared approach to that at the moment is that get away, spend a couple of weeks, let's see how we feel about it, given the circumstances are a bit different, and then let's make a call from there. But let me underline the fact that he is absolute quality in terms of his character, the way he's conducted himself. And as I said on the day, KB, the way that he's put club first, team first over the last 3 months has been, really very, very good.
I would expect that with all that taken into account, that John Barker would move on from Carlton, thinking that, well, Brendan's there for, let's hope, for Carlton's sake, next 6 to 10 years. For his CV, he's coached up to 13-odd games, to go and work at another club, so that if another position comes up, not only has he got the Carlton behind him, I think in the past he's been at Hawthorn, maybe it was one of the other clubs, might have been St Kilda at some stage. But it just adds to his CV so that if another job comes up in the future, whether it might even be the Essendon job, or, as we know, coach is always available, that it may give him a greater chance of taking on a senior role rather than taking a back seat at Carlton. I don't think anyone could blame him if he decides that best for his senior coaching aspirations is to actually go to another club.
And if that's a decision, we would back it. And indeed, there's a couple of clubs in the competition at the moment who are looking for a senior coach.
Correct.
And given what we've seen of him and assessed with him, he would give them a shake, I would think. And so there's that dynamic as well. If he took the path that you talked about, we would understand it and respect it. But there's also a flip side, that with a whole new regime that we're developing, that there's still a lot to be learnt in our camp as well. So it's why, KB, we felt, let's just give it a break after the season, a couple of weeks, and make a call on it then.
I read where Carlton's keen on Adam Treloar, Collingwood's keen on Adam Treloar, Richmond's keen on Adam Treloar. What's your chances of getting Adam Treloar? Stephen Silvani obviously has had a fair bit to do with Adam Treloar up there at the Giants. Have you got any confidence at all that you can grab him?
If Stephen had a metaphoric taco at the moment, it would be redlining constantly across the competition and trying to get things into position. Look, Adam Treloar is an outstanding young talent. I always feel uncomfortable talking about other players and clubs, particularly when they're active and they're in combat mode. But Treloar would be one of a great number of players at the moment that Carlton fans are assessing in terms of how we can improve our list, no doubt.
Okay, so you've got to have a crack at him. And so you should, and so should Richmond, and so should Collingwood, so should anyone, because he's an absolute jet. We saw him last week. I mean, he's pretty impressive, isn't he?
Oh, look, there's a lot of impressive players up there, as you'd expect. There's Stephen and the GWS team. I know they had some handy picks, but they've done a tremendous job of prioritising and getting that list together. Late in the season, it's still not surprising that they would fade a fraction, particularly with some absences, but they've got a lot of talent.
Matthew Cruiser, there was a caller yesterday on the run home saying that the Giants are keen on Matthew Cruiser. $1 million on the table. They're talking about the Bulldogs have got $750,000 on the table. I think even someone suggested the Tigers might have $700,000 on the table for Matthew Cruiser. You went to great lengths to suggest on one of those press conferences that you're very confident and for Carlton fans not to be anxious at all about losing Matthew Cruiser. He hasn't signed yet.
No.
Why hasn't he signed, and is that confidence being eroded?
Well, firstly, it's interesting, isn't it? This is the reverse of talking about Treloar, is that now we're talking about one of ours.
Correct.
And it's a very uncomfortable thing because we definitely, most assuredly, want Matthew Cruiser in our club. We've got this balance at the moment, KB, between you know, what we do with our list in terms of maximising, getting the best number of early picks in that we can to commence this build, this really strong build that's in front of us, versus keeping real character, real leadership, you know, real talent in our club. And Cruiser has all of that, so you don't want to lose him. But the reason this is going on a little bit longer at the moment is because of what the system does to you a bit at the moment. He's a free agent, and so there's you know, we're accepting of where it's at, and we've put our best foot forward with him, and we're just waiting to hear. So I'm not going to say that. We're not passive about it either, by the way, but we're playing the waiting game.
So he's a required player. You've got a deal on the table, and you've got your fingers crossed that you know, his love for Carlton wins out.
His love for Carlton, we know that's real. We know his loyalty is enormous. We also know that you talked about what GWS might be doing. Well, we happen to have someone in our camp at the moment who's well aware of what was offered to Matthew previously, going back some years to head north, and it was pretty significant. And he knocked it back on the basis of a number of things, but including loyalty to Carlton. We're hopeful that's the case again. We're not banking it yet, but we're very confident.
Chris Jones, another one, has been in the news, and I noticed he was on, I think it was the Channel 9 News. They're talking about, is he playing his last game for Carlton? He said he's under contract, he's got a year to go, and he wants to stay at Carlton.
So we talked about talent and et cetera in terms of what Carlton needs. What Carlton also needs is people who put club first, team first, and genuinely, real care for the club and have the right attitude. And I've seen glimpses of that from Chris. His appearances at the VFL level this year have been mostly because of that attitude, not because of talent, because we know his talent. So
highly talented.
Chris is saying he wants to stay at Carlton. We're very, very happy for Chris to stay at Carlton with the right attitude. No problem.
So you've got to work out whether or not he's got the right attitude.
Well, there's some strong conversations to be had. They have been, and they will continue to be had.
Can I ask this question on illicit drugs policy? There's a bit in the paper today. I've spoken about it today with Greg Venom-Denham as well. In the first strike, the AFL is talking about club not knowing about that. There's a $5,000, you know, fine, which is going to be suspended with that positive test, and there's some forced counselling and attending education sessions. I believe that we should have zero tolerance, and the players should be named. And in fact, I think, you know, they should be given a 6-week penalty. I don't believe it's up to the AFL to be a rehab organisation. I think other organisations handle that, but you support that player. But we're very strong on illicit drugs. But what about your point of view from a club, that this first positive test, which looks like maybe is the AFL is pushing through, is that you still won't know who that player is, and there'll be a $5,000 suspended fine and some sort of counselling will take place without you, the CEO, knowing?
I think the path we're heading down in terms of balancing up a stronger response to first and second strikes, indeed third strikes, is entirely appropriate. I think what's not appropriate, and CEOs across the competition and clubs across the competition have said this for years, is that you know, can't manage what you don't know. So we're very strong on the fact that CEO, and at his discretion, or if it needs to be prescribed even, people need to know. The worst thing in the world is to wake up one morning under the current regime, for example, and learn that a player's had a third strike and you're in damage control. You've had no capacity to be able to influence that outcome. So if that's the sticking point, and I don't know whether it is KB, I'd be surprised. I don't know Paul Marsh very well. I've sat with him a couple of times, and I find him to be, you know, a bright, personable person. But if Paul was running an AFL club, I have no doubt, smart young guy, he would want to know if one of his players had tested positive to an illicit substance. Because what we do then as clubs is we go into how can we support and manage our way through this. But you can't if you don't know about it. I also think, KB, that, and I understand a little bit of the reluctance at the same time, because having been in this for a while, maybe 10 years ago, I do remember some attitudes across the competition being perhaps a little out of sync with what the AFL were trying to do. But I really believe now that all clubs have the right attitude in terms of, okay, and I know that you don't quite agree with this, but human nature, we need to account for the human element. There's an element of everyone can make a mistake or be tricked or whatever, and we go into management mode, you know, strong counselling, education, penalty mode, etc. But the tolerance has been reduced for that in this new regime. I think there's still a place for that, and I think clubs' attitudes have come a long way in the last 10 years.
And Stephen, a lot of SMSs are coming through from Carlton fans. You've got a fine young player in Patrick Cripps, and they want to know how long are you going to contract Patrick Cripps for?
Until he's 33.
So what's his situation?
Well, I put him on staff.
Is he put him on staff, so means he's there until you don't want him. So what's his status at the moment, Patrick Cripps? Is he got a year to go, or are you going to sign him up on a five-year deal, or you know, tie him away? Because Carlton fans see him as being very important in whatever Carlton does in the future, that Patrick Cripps is going to be, you know, an important ingredient of Carlton becoming a strong side again.
Well, the first thing about Patrick Cripps' status is that I'd like to award him with a rising star, because whilst I haven't seen the other players in the competition, you know, I've seen Patrick week in and week out, and for a young fellow who started the season with less than 10 games, to finish the season being tagged and buffeted and still produce 30 possessions a game and 15 clearances, and what he's done has been, KB, quite extraordinary. I think you'd agree with that. So in my mind, he's every bit the rising star. In terms of his commitment to Carlton, he's contracted to the end of 2017. We'll be talking with him more over the summer and his management about extending that out, as you would expect us to do, because he is, besides the way he plays, he represents genuine, outstanding leadership at our club. And with you know, a series of other guys, it's been a tough year for Carlton, and I'm not telling Carlton supporters anything with that, but I genuinely hope that Carlton supporters see the reset at Carlton, putting the right people in the right places, and that they see some green shoots from our list. You know, Cripps and Graham and Buckley and Doherty and Casbolt and some of these relatively younger guys who have stepped up. And so, and there's another wave of them too, by the way. We just haven't seen enough of them in Byrne and Sheehan and the like. So There's some green shoots there, don't worry. But in terms of Cripps, he is central to that. Let's call it as it is. And we'll be doing everything we possibly can to make sure that he's stitched up for the long-term future.
And just on the back of that, memberships. Richmond, I think, is over 70,000. Collingwood's, you know, getting close to 80, and Hawthorn 75. So, you know, they're massive memberships. Carlton's a huge club as well. Should have a massive membership. For many years, hasn't been able to get members on board. I think this year, around about 45,000, Stephen, would it be 45?
47 and a half. And given we had a slow start, it's about parity with last year, which is a fair result. But you're quite right. If you do the benchmarking against other clubs, and we've had this conversation before, Carlton... It's interesting.
Can you create enough enthusiasm? I know Brendan Bolton's coming in, so he's got to send a message that, okay, we don't think Carlton's going to make finals next year or win the premiership, but there's a 3 or 4, maybe even a 5-year process to become a powerhouse again. Can you create... I think Brendan Gale was able to do this at Richmond.
Sure.
Hadn't played in finals, hadn't won premierships, but he gave some sort of vision, you know, with you know, how many premierships we could win in so many years, and we'd have so many members and play finals, and... He gave some sort of vision and drive that people had the back of their mind, and it worked brilliantly for Richmond.
10 out of 10.
Can you do the same?
10 out of 10 at Richmond. They've done a wonderful job of that, and it's a great case study for us. Just, I mean, that's being honest. It's a great case study for us. I listened with some curiosity, you know, about an occasional debate about whether Carlton's a big club anymore, and I think to myself, please, Carlton's a massive club. And I know, because I've been elsewhere and I've seen it from the outside, and now I've seen it at the inside. Carlton is a massive club. Massive in terms of its network, its latent support, its everything. That at the moment, it's not producing enough in terms of the membership number and the bottom line, etc., is a bit of the cycle that we go through, right? We will get Carlton to grow, and your case study of Richmond is a good one. Can we generate enough enthusiasm? If we can genuinely get the message across to people that we have reset our capability and our people, right people, right places, and we get our selections right and we start to grow the list and our club, we really need members with us, because they're part of the growth. It's part of growing Carlton, is to make sure that we have a growing membership. And I hope, my hope is, and to some extent expectation, KB, is that it'll be not just about our ladder position, but about seeing more of those green shoots in terms of the way that we grow. Come with us on the ride as we rebuild Carlton into being a great powerhouse again.
Steve, really appreciate your time and coming in today. As we say, it's been a tough 12 months for the Carlton Football Club, and got the final game coming up on the weekend. But we look forward to Carlton being a powerhouse once more, because, it's one of the great traditional Melbourne-based clubs. I like to see Melbourne-based clubs do very, very well. So thanks for joining us today, and good luck for the future, and good luck to Brendan Bolton.
KB, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Stephen Trigg, Carlton CEO.